Good morning. This is Trace Blue, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling, and we'll see you in the future.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for July 21st, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm COVID Chip Hassenflaw.
Oh boy, don't say COVID positive at least. I'll stay away from you for 2 weeks. We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Yes, Chip, you're right. This is day 130 of our COVID stay-at-home order. And boy, life has changed, my friend.
It has changed. It's like a dystopian novel, Steve.
But once again, it's only chapter one of this dystopian novel, and whoever's writing this really has to get to the meat of this story, because this has been boring.
Well, we're still in the setup stage, Steve.
Uh-huh. Setting up for what is the existential dread that I live under, and most of us live under, all day, every day.
Down, get my film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to get through The Morning Show. This is the series on Apple TV Plus featuring Steve Carell, Jennifer Aniston, and Reese Witherspoon.
It is, and it is fantastic. This was released along with Apple TV Plus back in November. And I have been busy, Steve. I have not been able to watch all those shows that I've been meaning to. So I picked up and I watched this show, The Morning Show. And this is an excellent show. So if you enjoyed Netflix's House of Cards with Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright, this is the follow-up. It's different. What it's sort of discussing is different. This is sort of a mixture, it's very timely, of sexual advances in the workplace, and it's a discussion of power, it's a discussion of how people use each other, it's certainly a discussion of how reality is viewed by victims, by the perpetrators, by the people around them, how it's looked at, and sort of how it's ignored until at some point it's exposed. This is very, very smart writing. You will definitely think very deeply when you are watching this show, and you're going to address those issues. The character that I think I'm going to mention most for our discussion is Martin Short's character. Martin Short is having a conversation with Steve Carell, and Steve Carell is basically saying, "Hey, listen, you know, powerful men get attracted to people, and things happen, and blah blah blah," and they're trying to convinced it. And we learned through the discussion that Martin Short's character is like a mixture between Weinstein and Woody Allen. He basically blurts out something that's like, "Well, how was I to know she was 15? That type of thing. Nobody walks around with their birth certificate. And so you're immediately like, I mean, as Steve Carell's character, Mitch, is going to say, you're in shock, like, oh my goodness, that is certainly way over the line right there. And Mitch, Steve Carell's character, at that point says something, "There's something different between me and you," he said. He said, "You're a predator." But as this series continues, there's the question you're going to ask yourself. Is Mitch, Steve Carell's character, a predator? And I think that if you're following as I watched it, you start having some sympathy for him throughout, because you don't have perfect information. But by the time it's over, I'm not so sure. You're not viewing Martin Short and Mitch, Martin Short's character, I can't think of his name, but and Steve Carell's character. I'm not sure if you're not looking at them the same. And in fact, I would almost assume that you would come to that same conclusion. There's an explosive ending to this. It certainly has a beautiful build-up to it, where House of Cards really explored power on the political stage. This one's certainly exploring the dynamics of it, about a gray world we live in, where from the outside you can look at things very black and white, how you can get sucked into the minutiae of reviewing it, But ultimately, you're going to have to stand up and you have to make a decision. This is thoughtful, thoughtful work. Apple TV Plus certainly bought a winner here. This is called The Morning Show.
Okay. I will not probably be watching this, just like I didn't watch The House of Cards. This doesn't appeal to my sensibilities, but I am aware that we live in a world that accusations can break someone, and the, God forbid, sexual harassment and sexual predators can certainly change a person's life. And looking at those issues is something that's important.
Well, I don't think any person can watch this, man or woman. This is not male bashing television. This is something that you really should watch to experience, because it is about the reality. It is about where you're sitting, what you should say. Is this something that's your business or not your business? When are adult decisions being made between two adults? And when is it a series where one person is more powerful than the other and is coercing another? Or when is it a person who is less powerful but coercing a more powerful person? This is thoughtful, grown-up television series. It's a 10-parter. And I highly recommend this. I will say this is 80 out of 100.
Wow. That's very powerful. I hope that Apple TV Plus has the drive it needs for people to get this and to watch it. They've really been floundering. They've seems like that they have such great things to present, and nothing's really caught fire. This is one of those bricks in the wall for sure.
Well, it's $5 for the month to be able to watch this, and it's worthy of your time. If this is a series, I mean, certainly it has the type of actors we all want to see, and the production quality is very, very high. Something I didn't mention about this is the theme song is absolutely forgettable, but the use of music in this show is really, really good. In addition to that, the palette of the colors they're using is very, very good. It's very modern, stuff like that. And whoever was the clothing designer that was working with them, lots and lots of textures. So this is, I mean, it doesn't get any better. There's so many different levels to experience this film, and I recommend it.
There you go. You know what's really good? Science fiction. I've gotten a chance this week again to listen to some of the panels from some of the conventions that would have happened had we, the opportunity to leave our homes for the last 130 days. You know how much I love conventions, and I love going to panels and seeing the stars of my favorite shows. I've had the opportunity to see some of them online this week. The first one was the cast of Battlestar Galactica. This is from Wizard World, one of the convention groups that I enjoy, and three of the stars of Battlestar Galactica came together to discuss the impact that show had upon storytelling. And we talk about Battlestar Galactica so often, Chip.
Well, in fact, I would say this is the beginning of modern streaming television. And while this is on the Sci-Fi network at the time, Sci-Fi network, it is now, it looks like streaming right now on the new Peacock streaming service. Sci-Fi Network was owned by NBC at the time. Mm-hmm. And certainly was a modern show. Ronald D. Moore created a modern series. I don't know how many seasons it ran. It was like four seasons, maybe?
Four seasons, yes, sir.
Okay. So
good stuff.
It was modern. It was a take on a juvenile property from the 70s, and certainly took it to a very high level for television at the time. And I don't know, what are we talking about? 10, 12, 15 years ago? We're still talking about this series.
Because of the emotional impact, the writer was able to capture the emotion of this traumatic event. And boy, is this a good time to be looking at trauma and how life has changed as a result of some big decisions, and the future being as clouded as it is. It's time to go back to Battlestar Galactica.
Did any one of them admit to being a Cylon?
Well, Aaron Douglas eventually was a Cylon, so yes.
Spoiler, yeah. Steve, spoiler.
Oh, no, did I just spoil a TV show from 15 years ago that you actually watched? Wow. Let's get to some TV shows that you've never watched, Chip. Maybe I can spoil those for you.
I know Captain Janeway.
Oh, you know of Captain Janeway. That's good. That's a good start. I got to see a panel of the cast of Star Trek Voyager this week. Garrett Wang, Tim Russ, Robert Picardo, and Robert McNeil all sat down to discuss Voyager, which is one of the lesser Star Treks. There's a lot of people that really did not like the storytelling in Voyager. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the idea of a ship being stranded so far away from Earth that they couldn't possibly get back in their lifetime, and watching what they would have to do to survive in their attempt to try to make it back to Earth. This was a really fun panel. These guys love each other and they miss working with each other. Garrett Wang and Robert McNeil started their own podcast in May. It's called The Delta Flyers, and I am going to now subscribe to that podcast after seeing this conversation with these men.
Did you learn anything interesting while you drank your Earl Grey tea?
That was Star Trek The Next Generation, not Voyager. But yes, the conversation that intrigued me the most here was about special effects. We see a lot of explosions in science fiction, especially in the Star Trek universe. And all four of these men had a story about when the special effects went wrong and they were injured on the set. And it's amazing to me that them, looking back upon what was happening, they see now that maybe some of the safety protocols to keep injuries from happening might have been a little bit lax on the set of Star Trek Voyager, and that's something that we need to be very concerned about going forward. This was a great conversation.
Well, in the old days, while Prince was still living, after he beat you in a basketball game, he would make you pancakes, or at least offer to make you pancakes. Steve, tell me about Master Pancake.
All right, we haven't really ever talked about Master Pancake on this show, I guess. Master Pancake is the riffing troupe in Austin, Texas. They are brilliant movie riffers. They are able to take a movie and to absolutely have the most fun I think I've ever seen a group have fun. As much as I love Mystery Science Theater 3000, as much as I love Riff Tracks, Master Pancake being a live show where you go to the Alamo Drafthouse and watch them do this stage show while this movie is going on is so entertaining.
Well, you used the word Alamo Drafthouse. That means that the audience is drinking beer, which makes it a little more rowdy, Steve.
It doesn't hurt. Let's put it that way. It doesn't hurt that they serve beer at the Alamo Drafthouse. I would love to have an Alamo Drafthouse in Chicago. I've been talking about that since I first learned of the Alamo Drafthouse from Brian Brushwood in Austin.
Well, I have a feeling that AMC Theater may be willing to sell one.
Well, AMC certainly changed their business model after the Alamo Drafthouse, where they started serving alcohol. And there are certainly the theaters like the iPic that have waitresses and a full menu that you can order in your seats, like the Alamo Drafthouse. Mm-hmm. But they're still not hitting that sweet spot. We have the Music Box Theater here in Chicago that has so many interesting films to show and presentations to see. That's what the Alamo Drafthouse has done across the country.
Well, Steve, I just want to hear, you know, a person like William Shatner say the word con. So did Master Pancake deliver?
Yes. Master Pancake has been showing several of their old movies, old stage productions online, and this week I watched two of them, Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan and Gladiator. Do you like Gladiator movies?
Oh, probably the classic airplane line. Do you like movies with gladiators?
These were so much fun. I was laughing out loud, and of course, it's a little bit strange to not have the group of people together to watch this in one place. We're all spread out. I can't hear anybody else laughing because, of course, my family is just staring at me, wondering why I'm watching a stupid old movie again. But I found a lot of joy in the sound of the joy that was coming from the internet.
I've got an idea for you. Your oldest son can basically set up a board, and as you're watching it, he can turn up the laugh track as you're watching it, and you can laugh with others.
That's what we need in the era of COVID. We need a full special effects crew and a full camera crew when we get back to school, because I'm going to need at least two cameras on me at school for that. So yes, there's going to be a lot of jobs created in the pandemic.
Let's see what Stacey saw.
Hi everyone, this week I watched Two Heads Creek, a horror movie that pokes fun at its genre, its characters, and the world at large, making a good point about a serious subject whilst making you laugh in the process. It's out on video on demand now for you to watch. Drama queen actress Annabelle and her shy butcher brother Norman leave behind their butcher shop in post-Brexit Britain in search of their birth mother, who happens to live in Two Heads Creek in Australia, which is not only remote, but downright weird. And with their mother nowhere to be seen when they arrive, and locals hiding a dark secret, they have a fight on their hands to figure out what on earth is going on. Now, it isn't a new idea to set a film in a strange little town and have visitors turn up to figure out its secrets. But when it's done with a lot of humour and a ton of pop culture references like it is here, it manages to feel fresh and new. By making fun of classic horror tropes and using some of the most well-known scenes in big films, it makes you feel like you're in on the joke and a part of it rather than just being told the joke, a quality that makes the film endearing in a way. They lift entire lines from some of the biggest films that have been made, and it's a giggle to spot them and see how they've made them fit into the film. The cast here are mostly established film and TV actors, which I feel benefits the film because they seem very comfortable in their roles, which they have to play pretty straight-faced for most of it, adding creepiness to the proceedings and making everything that happens in the film seem more wacky in comparison. Eagle-eyed Australian soap fans might recognise Apple, played by Helen Dalymore, from Home and Away. This is a very different role to there. And one of my favourite performances in this film. She's loud, brash, and though clearly not okay, she's the glue that holds this town of weirdos together. For some, the humour might seem a bit strange here. It's a very British-Aussie sense of humour. No surprise with a British writer and Aussie director. It relies on darkness and making light of awful, awful things in a funny way that I know not everybody gets or enjoys. But if you do, this will work for you because it's certainly out there. If you've been watching Last One Laughing, Australia on Prime at the minute, which you should do if you haven't already. You'll know what I mean. It might not be what you're used to if you're new to it, but I implore you to give it a go. It's good fun. For the most part, Two Heads Creek plays on being mysterious and odd, with very little violence aside from a weaponized boomerang. Yes, you did hear that right. Until the final act, where it suddenly turns into an absolute bloodbath set against glam rock karaoke that will leave you with a serious earworm, with their lyrically changed cover version of Horror Movie, which some horror fans may also recognise as the closing track to the ABCs of Death. Taking the seeds that it's planted through the story so far and turning the whole thing up to 11, there's gallons of blood and body parts galore with a satisfying and funny ending. Two Heads Creek is a comedic horror film that makes good points about the way both Britain and Australia seem to be going on hot-button political topics, while serving it all up with a dose of weirdness. Whilst you're laughing, it is hard not to recognise the point that they're trying to make about those who want to shut themselves off from others who might not be like them. And it's done deftly in a way I really liked. This is a fun little horror that pays off in the end for Gorehounds and gives an ending that could pave the way for more in future. If you like this, you'll probably like the neon schlocky rollercoaster that is Necrotronic, which I would love to say I've already reviewed, but honestly, I can't remember, so if I haven't, be sure to nudge me on Twitter and I will give you one. As well as New Zealand classics Black Sheep, which really shouldn't need an introduction at this point, but if you don't know about it, it's about were-sheeps. And Bad Taste, the Peter Jackson 80s sci-fi horror comedy that showcases the crazy things you can do on a low budget with a lot of imagination. And that's all for this time. If you want to hear more of my ramblings on films, or chat to me about horror, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at @filmswithstacey, where you can also find links to my website to read more. Until next time, happy viewing.
Thank you, Stacey. Glad to hear from you. It's wonderful. Streaming this week, boy, there's been a change in our streaming list here, Chip.
Sure. It looks like this is a big week for streaming. In fact, there was a Wes Anderson film that was set to be released this week. But this week, they actually lifted it, and they moved it to October, like many things. But we actually have four films that will be streaming, not just from Netflix. These are just four films. And so somewhere, the studios are thinking, we need to get something out, because later on, we need to have rentals. So these are going to be rented as first releases, and then maybe later on, they'll be what we would call like a normal cost for a rental. So let's talk a little bit about a Ron Perlman deal.
Yeah, there's a Ron Perlman and Malcolm McDowell film coming available. That sounds so strange, but coming available is about as good as we can get here. This is called The Big Ugly. This is about Anglo-American relations when a London mob boss invests in a Western Virginia oil deal. Oh, boy.
Well, that's West Virginia. But interesting, West Virginia is known for coal and not oil. I'm not sure if there's oil there. But you know what? Let's just go with it. And The Big Ugly is streaming this week. So, Steve, do you have any movies for us that are really scary on a vacation home where couples go out there and have all the fears of the modern world thrown upon them besides COVID?
Yes, there is a movie called The Rental, written and directed by Dave Franco, which is the story of two couples renting a vacation home for a celebratory weekend getaway, and boy, does it turn scary on them.
And this is a mansion out in the middle of nowhere, and you get there, you got this beautiful lake in front of you, and then you find out the entire facility has cameras on you, and some guy's hunting you down. So this looks scary, Steve.
Yeah, it's got Toby Huss in it, too, so I'll take that one. I'll probably watch that one, actually.
All right, so Steve, do you have any more scary movies?
Yep, there's a movie called Amulet. This is the story of an ex-soldier living homeless in London, offered a place to stay in a decaying old house inhabited by a young woman and her dying mother. There's something sinister going on in this one.
Yeah, this has certainly got some psychological horror going on, and it looks scary. Steve, let's just go back to the Jim Gaffigan films. Do you have any one of those for me?
Boy. Of course there's a Jim Gaffigan film. There's always a Jim Gaffigan film. He has worked a lot in the last few years, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
This one is called Most Wanted. This is a story that takes place in 1989, where a Canadian journalist investigates the circumstances surrounding the suspicious arrest of a heroin addict imprisoned in a Thai jail.
Yeah, this doesn't look like a comedy, Steve. So these are our four streaming movies that we found that are going to be released this week. Good luck.
Book it. Brings us to our book at our book of the week. Oh boy, Chip, you found a presentation from one of our favorite authors.
Absolutely. And this is an Audible presentation, Steve. So this has been, it was announced a long time ago, and I received my email saying that it was ready for me to listen. And this is The Sandman. And this is based on the comic series by Neil Gaiman.
Mm-hmm. This is a story that is ripe for adaptation, isn't it?
Yes, and this is based on Neil Gaiman's work, The Sandman, which was a comic series. And let me give you a little bit of background. After Alan Moore had finished his run on a book called Miracle Man, which was a deconstruction of the superhero mythos, ultimately the story ends with the Superman of the time, the Captain Marvel character, giving everyone in the world superpowers who would want them. He passed that on to Neil Gaiman. So that was Neil Gaiman's introduction into the American market. At that same time, DC Comics was hiring British authors to come over and help write and renew the DC Comics series. And so Neil Gaiman thought about it, and he decided he was going to create a character called Sandman. Now, there's been a Sandman in DC Mythos in the past, which he integrates into this, but reality, this is a new character. And because it was so popular, it was able to grow beyond its initial stories, and it created a kind of its own world of its own. Ultimately, they created their own imprint. The imprint was called Vertigo Comics, and Vertigo was just shut down maybe a year or so ago as an imprint. But it was designed to be a much more mature line of works. It was, instead of appealing to young people, it was designed to appeal to teenagers and young adults. And from there, Neil Gaiman started releasing, you know, the books that we may know him for, American Gods, among a whole bunch of other stuff. Our presentation here is Dirk Maggs. He adapted and directed this. This is a full cast presentation. Mm-hmm. This, of course, stars...
Star-studded.
Yeah, Charles Xavier stars in this, Steve.
Yeah, James McAvoy, who I just saw an interview this week. He wants to be Patrick Stewart in every presentation where there's a young version of Patrick Stewart involved. He would love to do a young Picard series. I would watch the heck out of that with James McAvoy. He is one of my favorite actors working right now.
And that guy from the Planet of the Apes, he was there too. I don't think he plays a chimp, though.
Andy Serkis. He is absolutely the CGI guy. He is the guy that if there's a CGI character, it's probably Andy Serkis, who not only did the motion capture, but the voice. So, yes, I will take an Andy Serkis.
All right, so this series is basically adapting the first three volumes of the collected work. So, roughly issues 1 through 20 or 1 through 21 is what we're adapting. By the way, they're on sale right now at Comixology for $6 a volume. So if you wanted to buy a volume and actually follow along, you can. It's not perfect because Neil Gaiman is our narrator for this story. He's probably the greatest person to read his works. I mean, he's listening to him. It's listen to butter, my friends. But what you can do is, Neil Gaiman, instead of the pictures being drawn out for you, he's describing sort of what's going on. And I have the first volume, and I was able to follow along and watch the story. Basically watch the story as it's being read to me and performed for me. So this is a story of Lord Morpheus being captured. So there is a cult that wants to live forever. And they are performing a ceremony with the idea of trapping death. But they don't get death. They get dream. And that's Lord Morpheus. He arrives. He's in a basement somewhere. They trap him. And he stays in basically caged for 40 or 50 years. When they trap him, they end up stealing a few things from him. They steal a mask from him. They steal a big ruby amulet. They steal something else. Those get scattered, and they end up being played out around the DC universe. So ultimately, we're introduced to a bad guy at Arkham Asylum called Dr. Destiny, and he has used this ruby that used to be owned by Lord Morpheus. The gentleman who led the cult that trapped him every year comes down and makes Dream an offer. The offer is, you know, release your secrets to immortality, and don't attack us, and we'll let you go. Dream sits there and looks at him and doesn't respond. He's not going to negotiate with them. And although he's being trapped, he doesn't sleep, and it's impacting the world around him. There are young people who are not able to dream, who are not able to sleep, and so there's something that's beyond his power that's going on. The gentleman who led the cult gets old and dies. His son takes over. The people who are watching the cage that Lord Morpheus is in are told, do not fall asleep. Do not fall asleep. They're given shifts. They work in pairs. Guess what? One night they fall asleep, and that's when Lord Morpheus escapes. And at that point, he is off to collect his lost mementos, his tokens that help him focus his power. The dream realm is in disarray because he hasn't been there for 50 or 60 years. These early stories are very connected to the DC universe as we know them. As we move from this and as the the stories progress, they get further and further away from this. I mean, the Martian Manhunter shows up. We get Arkham Asylum showing up. We get some talks about the Justice League International. But these are just, at the time that he's originally presenting this, you know, they're basically presenting it within this, this Superman and Batman world. Later on, it's the Vertigo world. It's the world that really is so loosely connected, it doesn't even have to be this. And the stories start maturing even further. This is an incredibly fun exploration of this. This has certainly had an impact on a lot of the series out there. You mentioned Lucifer. He's introduced in this.
Right, and he's played here by Michael Sheen, who you might remember from Good Omens, the TV show Lucifer, which was based on this character coming out and being his own series, was wonderful on Fox.
And I want to end our little discussion on this with a statement that Gaiman ended up winning a short story award that was from a group that immediately changed the rules after he wrote the story, after he won, that said no more comics can win these short story awards. And ultimately, it's where Dream and William Shakespeare make a deal with each other. And William Shakespeare is told he needs to write three plays to Lord Morpheus. And in return, Lord Morpheus offers him something. I don't know. I can't remember what he offers him. But the first story that's being presented to Lord Morpheus is A Midsummer Night's Dream. So there's this connection with the real world, this the DC world, the Batman and Superman world, and with this world that Gaiman is creating as he's going along. This is okay. I would not say this is going to be the greatest life-changing story ever at this point. It will get better, and I hope enough people buy this that they continue making these presentations. I should mention also that Netflix has picked up this series, so they're going to make a show on it.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that should be coming out at some point. And so let's leave a little Neil Gaiman, The Sandman, Book of Dreams, Book 1, quote, where he says, "The only thing that kept me going was stories. Stories are hope. They take you out of yourself for a bit, and when you get dropped back in, you're different. You're stronger. You've seen more. You've felt more. Stories are like spiritual currency." As I have always said with Neil Gaiman, some people just say more with their words.
That's awesome. That is beautiful. Neil Gaiman is one of our favorite authors, and this features some of our favorite actors. I look forward to getting the Audible on that. That is The Sandman, and it's available on audible.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. Life has changed, Chip.
Life has changed. The co-founder of Lollapalooza, Mark Geiger, has basically said he doesn't think there's going to be any concerts, Steve. No concerts until 2022.
Wow. I don't disagree with him on that forecast, because I think the summer of 2020 is over. And I don't know what's going to happen in 2021. I don't disagree with him.
And he's citing basically the inability to get insurance is going to be the reason, because you can't guarantee people's safety. People are going to go, they're going to commingle, and it just takes a few people to get sick. And so it looks like that, you know, all those people who love live music, well, you're going to love it when it comes back.
Right. Yeah, I've been thinking about getting some more concert DVDs in my collection, because I went to look for my live music fix on 4th of July, and I only have two. So I think I need to get more of that footage from those live concerts.
You can always go to YouTube. There's plenty of concerts on YouTube, which are legal.
I never think of YouTube. YouTube is not on my radar at all, so maybe I'll look through YouTube. That's good advice. How about movies? What's happening with the movie industry?
Well, our two big budget movies that were scheduled to be released recently are being pushed back once again. So Mulan has been pushed back for the third time since March, and Tenet, which is our Christopher Nolan film that we've all been looking for, has been pushed back for the second time. And AMC, in response, the theater chain, has basically, they're delaying opening too. So they've been given August release dates. We'll see. I mean, all the ones that were supposed to come out early in May, they've been delayed to later this year. They're going to need this backlog of material because they're also not filming right now. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness we've had this renaissance of movies and series out there that are so good. What a great time to get through Breaking Bad if you have to do it. Or what a great time to see that Battlestar Galactica series on Peacock because you never got to see it. What a great time to see Ozark or any a number of series that you didn't get to see.
And my solution for this is going out to the drive-in theaters. I've been to two different drive-in movies this week, and it's an outdoor method of getting together as a community and watching a movie together, something that I miss dearly.
And so let's talk a little bit about that, because drive-in movie theaters seem to be, you know, something that we would experience back when we were really young, sort of a blast from the past. But they seem to be having a little bit of a renaissance right now. And according to our article, there's 305 movie theaters, outdoor movie theaters in the nation right now. So even before the coronavirus happened, we were sort of seeing a resurgence of interest in seeing a film outside in your car or, you know, sitting on a lawn chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed going out to the theater, having that community. Even, you know, yes, we got to see our friends who also joined us at the drive-in, but getting to see those strangers, to share that experience is something that has been missing for the last 130 days.
And usually we're not watching, or at least typically right now, we're not watching the most current releases out there. Obviously, they've been delayed for the stuff for this summer. But you got to go re-experience a movie that you're well acquainted with.
Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it.
We went to go see one of my favorite movies of all time, Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back. Yes, it was released in 1980. Yes, that was 40 years ago. Thanks for doing that math real quick. But it's still the experience. Yes, I know what's going to happen in the story. I know how the story goes. But being able to be a part of the community of people, having a communal moment watching this movie together is what really brought us out. It's inexpensive. It was a Tuesday special because we don't have anything better to do. And it was $12 per car. This was at the Golden Age Cinemas here in McHenry, Illinois. You know why we went to McHenry, Chip?
Because that's where the theater is?
Because there ain't no Shermer in Illinois.
Well, this is up in northern Illinois. McHenry is. And certainly tell us a little bit about this. How did you get the sound? Was the snack bar any good? How many people were there? And did you
hundreds of people.
And did you get to see Black Panther?
Okay, to start from the bottom of your questions and go up, no. At midnight after The Empire Strikes Back, we left and we did not watch the double feature of Black Panther afterwards, but lots of people did. There were hundreds of people at this drive-in on a Tuesday night. It was interesting to see how many people need to get out of their homes and to safely and inexpensively have some entertainment and some of that community that I keep talking about. Mm-hmm. The snack bar was open. It was great. They have pizza and hot dogs and hamburgers. They had popcorn and slushies, which that's not one of my favorites. Water with sugar on top is not one of my favorite things in the world, but lots of people. No.
No, water with sugar, and then you know, throw a little bit of syrup in there. Steve, you got it all.
No, thank you. But These facilities are put together. They have all of the equipment. You listen to the sound through your FM radio in your car, or you can bring a little portable FM radio. Some of them still have the little boxes that you put on your car window, but most of the drive-ins nowadays, they just rely on the FM signal, which works really well. It delivers really good sound instead of that mono tinny sound from that speaker on the window.
The old one used to hang on the window.
Mm-hmm. And it was great. It was wonderful. I do have my electric car, so I was able to run the air conditioning while I was watching this movie the whole time without the engine running, which is a miracle. And I think that there's going to be a lot more drive-in action in the next couple of weeks.
And while it's a warm summer, it's certainly at 9 o'clock at night, it does cool down a little bit. So we kind of have the perfect weather for seeing this type of film experiencing this. What I will also mention is that it seems like there are people, or at least entrepreneurs, who love this type of presentation and are willing to go out and build a modern facility like this. And I was thinking up in, was it Eustis, Florida, or down in Eustis, Florida, but north of Orlando. How about that, in the center of the state? They're building the world's largest drive-in movie theater. And it's called the Lighthouse 5 because it has a lighthouse in the middle of it. But they're going to have RV campgrounds around it, restaurants and shops. I mean, when you're telling me about this, it seems like we have the technology today. It shouldn't be too difficult to have the local park district or the local mall or whoever just throw up a big screen.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm thinking of, is the local mall. The local mall is not being used, hasn't been used for a few years now, and those parking lots are ready for cars to come in. If you had a big screen that you rented or whatever, constructed, and then an FM broadcast system where you could have the sound, you could set up a pretty interesting outdoor experience in all of those spaces pretty easily. They did that at Soldier Field this week. They set up three giant screens in the parking lot at Soldier Field and sold tickets to watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, because why not? Well, welcome to Chicago. Here's one of your Chicago movies. And people are clamoring for this kind of entertainment.
Well, I think it takes place in Shermer's, Dave, so...
Yes. There is no Shermer in Illinois.
And going back even further on our little discussion down the rabbit hole, up in Minneapolis, Brit's Pub, you and I visited during a certain celebration.
Reunion show. Yeah. Uh-huh. The Mystery Science Theater 3000 reunion show that we were so amazed to be a part of. That was an amazing weekend.
Brit's Pub is a great big British pub, a bar in downtown Minneapolis. They have a parking deck that you can park in, and on top of that, they have planted a great big green field where you can play English bowling on it.
Lawn bowling, yep.
Right. And then they have a great big, you know, in the football stadiums where they have the great big screens.
Jumbotron. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, they usually play, you know, the Vikings, or they play the local, I shouldn't say local, but they play soccer games on it. It just seemed, the whole time I was there, I was going, wow, there's so much space here. In fact, that's a perfect bar for social distancing, too.
Uh-huh. They've got a good setup in Minneapolis.
No kidding.
You park underneath it, and you've
got this football field where you play. I mean, it just seems they got the spacing right.
Yeah. That was a wonderful weekend and a great experience at Brit's Pub. That was a fun night for sure. I look forward to what all of this looks like going forward. The life has changed. The McHenry Outdoor Theater is fantastic. The Midway Drive-In in Dixon that I went to last week, fun experiences.
And if you go to our show notes, you can get links to both of those, and you can find out what's playing. From the Chicago proper, you're probably looking at about an hour to get there, maybe a little longer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Steve, or that's not the only thing that's going on this week. What other types of things can we do?
Well, we can stay in instead of going out, Chip, because there's so many live events coming this week. First, we've got Movie Sign! The Mads are sending us yet another bad movie that's happening tonight. Trace Beaulieu and Frank Conniff are riffing Ed Wood's classic Glenn or Glenda from 1953. That's happening tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central Time. It is their first show of 2020. They have not been able to put together a show up until this point. Tickets are $10, and a portion of the proceeds are benefiting the NAACP. So to say I'm excited to see Trace and Frank is an understatement. They are just wonderful guys and so funny. I look forward to Glenn or Glenda tonight on my computer in the basement while my family stares at me and wonders what I'm laughing at again.
Well, and the link is also in our notes. Steve, that's not the only thing you can stream this week. What's going on in San Diego?
Yeah, San Diego Comic-Con is happening this weekend, and because we can't go there, because the convention circuit is closed, they are doing a full online convention. A full schedule is available at comic-con.org, and it is a full schedule, just like if we were at the convention. There are panels about every subject. This runs from Wednesday through Sunday, and you can schedule your viewing just like you would if you were actually going to the convention through shed.com. And the MST3K panel is happening on Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific. That's 8 p.m. Central, by the way. That's just, you could write that down in your calendar, Chip.
That sounds like more riffing, Steve.
Yes, but the weird part is that this panel is featuring three different people, basically from three different eras of Mystery Science Theater. It's Joel, the creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000, Bill Corbett, who is technically not in Mystery Science Theater anymore. He did appear in two episodes of season 12, but he's a Riff Tracks guy, and J. Elvis Weinstein will also be on this panel. We haven't heard from Josh in a long while, and I look forward to seeing the three of them interacting.
So when he leaves or exits, do they go, Elvis has left the building?
Yes.
Excellent. Yes. Steve, can we boldly go where no person has gone before?
Uh-huh, right there in your very own basement with your family staring at you wondering what you're laughing at. The crew of the Enterprise from Star Trek The Next Generation will be online to chat this Saturday, July 25th, as a part of GalaxyCon. That's another convention that is not happening, but is happening online. Jonathan Frakes, our old friend, Marina Sirtis, Denise Crosby, John DeLancey, and Brent Spiner will all be together on this panel at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central. I'm a little excited about that panel.
Well, that's not the only one, Steve. We talked a little bit about cults and all sorts of scary stuff. Is there a teenage version of that that we could listen to?
Yes, the cast of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is on Netflix, which we've discussed many times. If you haven't watched The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, we suggest it highly because it's so well done. The cast from that show are going to be online on Sunday, July 26th at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. This is a part of Wizard World, the other convention that's not happening this week. In my opinion, the highlight of that panel is Michelle Gomez, the Missy from Doctor who is also in The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I look forward to that panel a lot too.
Well, Steve, that's a lot of streaming stuff, but they can always join us. Let me do my Christopher Lee impersonation. The Valley of Fear.
The Valley of Fear. Yes, we are continuing our daily podcast, reading through the canon of Sherlock Holmes. And yes, we are on to the last of the Sherlock Holmes novels, The Valley of Fear from 1915. We started it yesterday, and we're getting on to Chapter 2 tomorrow. And you should join us, because we're having so much fun. Professor Pamela Bedore is giving us a real real education in all of this.
She says that at some point we may be learned, but we have to keep working at it.
We are certainly just following her lead because she is brilliant and she knows the Sherlock Holmes canon so well and gets us to the interesting topics that we get to.
And in particular, this story. She's written on it professionally and she teaches mm-hmm. this story. So we are certainly going to get insights that we may not be able to find elsewhere. And
that's right.
You can join us. And then when it's over, the COVID will be over and we all can go back to normal.
That's right. This is what's been keeping us from getting back to normal, is we're still doing a daily podcast. Good. We would love to hear from you on all of this. If you have stuff that you want to share with us, you could follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes for all the Sherlock Holmes stuff. You can give us a call or a text, and you can go to our dedicated Sherlock Holmes website, Sandwiches at Irregular Hours, for all of the Sherlock Holmes conversations that we're kind of keeping separate from the regular Tuesday Too Much Scrolling. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yep, we sure can. I'll have a lot of stories to tell about me sitting in the basement and my family wondering what I'm doing. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hudson Flow.
We'll see you in the future. Good luck, f***ers.